Right now, wind from the south southwest at 20, 71 degrees at 10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. Don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, Kenosha, online at andreasgifts.com.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. As you may or may not know, we experienced some significant technical difficulties yesterday that forced the cancellation of yesterday's morning show. Because both interviews involved very timely topics, previewing events happening this weekend, we thought it was important for those interviews to be replayed on today's program. So those of you who were tuning in expecting to hear Nan Calvert should be tuning into tomorrow's morning show instead. And as always, if you have trouble listening to a morning show as it airs, you can always hear it after the fact on WGTD's website. You'll find the morning show archive on the front page of our website, WGTD.org. Here's part one of today's program. That is the music which opens the Symphony No. 1 in C major, Opus 21, by Beethoven. And this is the work that is going to be front and center for what promises to be a very special concert this Saturday evening by the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra, a concert that begins at 7:30. The concert focuses on Beethoven's First Symphony. In fact, that work will be played in its entirety in the second half of the concert. The first half is going to be an introduction to this work and Beethoven. And I'm very, very excited to be able to have with me on the telephone David Anderson, who is music director for the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra, to talk about this unconventionally conceived concert Saturday night that promises to be a very special opportunity for people to come to understand the work that they will then ultimately hear played in its entirety in the second half. I am most intrigued. I hope you are as well. And David Anderson, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's great to be here.
Glad we can be talking again. And I know that when we were setting this up, one of the slightly complicating factors was the fact that you've recently been in Europe. Can you just say a word about the trip you just took?
Sure. My wife is the director of choirs at the University of Pittsburgh, and she took her choir on an international tour, 12 days in the UK, and I got to just tag along as a groupie, and so it was an excellent trip for us and the students. And you know, when I was there, I was reminded about something that a mentor of mine, Randy Swigum, who's the music director of the Eldon Youth Symphony, when he was talking with the conductors, he said, you know, your job as an educator is to be a tour guide of the pieces that you are exploring. And I'd forgotten that for a few years, but as I was, you know, going through all of these magnificent castles and stately homes and cathedrals, and we would have tour guides and they would point out different things about them, I was reminded, like, you know what? That's actually what we're doing on Saturday. That's what the entire orchestra is going to be doing on Saturday in the first half of the concert, is we're going to be the tour guides for the audience so that they can experience Beethoven 1 in the second half with this information that hopefully will make their listening of it meaningful.
It's a terrific idea. Was it your idea, or is somebody else involved with the orchestra who suggested it?
Well, we actually stole a little bit from the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. They do a series of concerts called Beyond the Score. And so in those concerts, they have this huge presentation in the first half where there's a narrator and then there's a conductor with the orchestra, and they play different excerpts and they take you through the journey of, you know, different aspects of the piece, and then they take an intermission, and then in the second half they play the entire performance. And so I was like, well, you know, we should give that a try, and so we'll see what happens.
So is this a first for the Lake Geneva Symphony?
I believe it is, yes.
Wow. Well, that makes it all the more exciting. Did you choose Beethoven 1, that is Beethoven's first symphony, to be the piece, or was that also a selection from someone else?
Yes. I chose Beethoven 1, and this is our seventh year to what we have is called the Beethoven Project, and so every single year the orchestra plays a Beethoven symphony because, you know, his symphonies are the core of the repertoire, and so like, well, let's play them all, but spread over the course of 9 years. And so we began with actually his second symphony a few years back, which was my first year as music director, and so that's kind of how I can mark time, how many years I've been music director. Is now this is our seventh year, and so we haven't played them in order, of course. So we'll do one this year, and then next year we'll do Beethoven 5, and then the following year we'll do Beethoven 9.
So you'll finish out with quite a big bang. So
that's right.
So Saturday night's performance is going to feature Beethoven 1, but this is the first time that the audience of the Lake Geneva Symphony will hear one of these Beethoven symphonies in this particular way, in this kind of format.
That is correct.
So let's talk a little bit about, first of all, let's talk a little bit about this work itself ahead of talking about what you will do Saturday evening with it. First of all, explain to our listeners where Beethoven's First Symphony falls within his span as a composer.
Well, you know, the traditional way of looking at Beethoven is three different style periods, and your early and your middle and your late. And I think one of the misconceptions people have about Beethoven is that he waited until his middle period to be revolutionary, you know, to be a true genius. And so one of our main ideas of the concert is that actually right from the very beginning, Beethoven 1, he's on this pathway to be a super revolutionary, and where he's innovating every aspect of composition. And you even take that first chord that we heard that you had just played at Beethoven 1. It's not the right chord. People should know that. It's a symphony in C major, and all of the music history that leads up to Beethoven, when you're in C major, you need to start with the C major, but he doesn't. He has a B flat thrown in there, which makes it not in the key of C major. And so that in itself, you know, he's kind of announcing to the world, guess what? I'm here. Things are going to be a little bit different. I'm going to go my own way.
Right. I want to play that little moment again. So our listeners can remember what you are talking about, the sort of unsettled nature of that first seventh chord leading to another chord. and then leading to another chord, but in a way that just leaves us very, very much sort of hanging and waiting and anticipating for the next thing. And that's, again, very atypical for the way a symphony of this period would have opened. So here once again, just for a few moments, the very opening to Beethoven's First Symphony. And of course, eventually, the work starts, this first movement settles itself into C major, and then eventually starts going along at a cheerful clip. And at that point, this seems like the more typical characterization of early Beethoven as kind of quasi-Mozart. You're so right. The way this work actually opens points to a very original thinker. What else are you going to say about this work in terms of how it fits into Beethoven's body of work?
Well, I would still talk about this very first chord because it seems so. The first audiences would have been shocked and even scandalized by this very first chord, because not just is it not in C major, the wrong instruments are playing. Because strings are supposed to dominate the texture of a symphony at that time. And all of a sudden, he plays this first chord, and the strings have this pizzicato, this, you know, very light, just punctuating what the woodwinds are doing. And so the woodwinds have they dominate the texture from the very beginning here. And people at the first performance, they even said, is this harmony music, which is basically another word for band music? Because it was such a weird thing, and so we'll spend a little bit of time just on this first section because it is so strange what the audiences would hear. And then, as you just referenced, he wanders around tonally. You don't really know that you're in the key of C major until the 13th measure when this fast music comes in, and so we'll spend some time on that. We'll talk a little bit about each movement, but we'll also talk about this idea of how Beethoven's theme is very short. It's really three or four notes. This instead of a melody, it's what we'll call a motive. And everybody knows the most famous motive probably in the history of music is Beethoven 5. You have this short, 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 long. And he crafts this entire symphony, his symphony number 5, around this very short idea. I think something like 75% of the measures in the first movement of that symphony have the short, 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 long somewhere in them. Exactly. And so we have this idea that, Beethoven's doing this thing called motivic development, and he's waited until the fifth symphony to do that. But one of our main points is that he's starting this in the very first symphony, this bum, bum, ba-dum. That little motive is going to happen at the beginning, and you'll use it throughout the entire first movement. Hmm.
This is also a work in which we're treated to a really lovely second movement that is exceptionally beautiful, at least in my humble opinion. One of the tenderest things that Beethoven ever composed. Let's just hear the very beginning of it, but is there something you want to say about this second movement before we just sample its opening?
Sure, and without giving away kind of our whole presentation.
Right.
You can, this first movement motive, bum, 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 the little dot that happens in the second and third notes, you're going to find the same motive in the second movement. It'll happen in the third measure of the second violins when they start, and every single instrument, as the texture layers, as the instruments are added, you'll hear that same dotted figure come back. And so this is one of Beethoven's way of connecting movements, which again was revolutionary at the time, to connect movements together with the same motive.
So here's just the opening of the second movement of Beethoven's First Symphony in C Major. That is such beautiful writing by Beethoven. So how would you compare this to, for instance, something written by Mozart, roughly the same time, of course, by the time the First Symphony of Beethoven is publicly played? Mozart has been gone for about a decade or so, but not long before his death. Would a slow movement by Mozart have sounded something like this, in your opinion?
You know, it might have. Whenever I think of Mozart, I know he's such a gifted melodist. You know, whenever you hear a Mozart melody, one of the things that you hear it a couple of times and you think to yourself, you know, I think I've heard this before. I think I've always known this melody, even if it's like the first or the second time that you've ever heard it. And because he was so gifted. And Beethoven sometimes doesn't get a lot of credit for his melody, his melodic writing, because of he was such... You know, he was known for this motives that he wrote, for example, in the Fifth Symphony and everything. But here's an example of Beethoven is look, I can write a melody too. And so when you hear this, it just has this nice lilt to it. But it's at the same time, I don't know, for me, whenever you hear it, it is one of those you hear it for the first time and it's like, oh, I've always known this melody, but I can't explain why.
When I listen to this particular movement, especially. It seems to me that it's the kind of music that, to the casual listener, sounds quite simple. Not only simple in the sense of, you know, sort of unadorned, and you sort of feel like you're hearing everything very clearly and cleanly. It doesn't sound like complicated music with complicated textures. But on the other hand, it's also music that someone might. I think erroneously think is easy to play, and I suspect that the fact that it is so spare in its texture means that there's also nothing to hide behind, and that it's really important to try to achieve, in a sense, a kind of perfection in order to really play this kind of music well and for it to be as beautiful as it was meant to be.
Yeah, it's very, very well said, and you know it should also be pointed out in this movement. It begins kind of like a fugue that Bach, you know, would have written. When you start with just one voice, for example, in the beginning of this, it's the second violins, by the way, it's the wrong instrument. First violins are supposed to start pieces, but Beethoven is like, here, I'm going to give this to the second violins. But they start as just one line playing, and then the second line plays the same idea and it joins the texture, and then there's a third idea and then the fourth idea. And so this is how a Bach fugue would begin, and Bach fugues are notoriously difficult to play, whether you're a solo instrument or if you have a Bach fugue in the middle of a choir. Those are, as you mentioned, are very, very challenging to pull off.
Right. Let me replay just one more time the opening of the second movement and have our listeners listen carefully for those various voices in the orchestra as they each come in one at a time, each playing essentially the same line in what amounts to sort of a fugue of sorts. And it's part of what makes this, exceptionally beautiful and also exceptionally difficult. This is the opening to Beethoven's Symphony Number 1, the second movement. So lovely. I just think this is so beautiful. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today in this portion of the morning show with David Anderson, the music director of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. And we are talking about their concert coming up this Saturday night at 7:30, which is going to feature Beethoven's First Symphony, but in an unconventional format in which the first half of the concert will involve an exploration of this work. And then in the second half of the concert, Beethoven's First Symphony will be played in its entirety. Let's talk about the third movement, which is the minuet. And if I recall correctly, it kind of flows pretty much without pause into the fourth movement, or at least it sort of can be played that way, I believe. Am I remembering that correctly?
It certainly can, yes. We might put a little bit of break in it, but you've heard it both ways.
So tell us what you like about the minuet.
Well, this is this idea. You have this long, short, long, short, long, short, long motive that happens pretty much throughout this entire minuet. And again, this idea of pathway to genius. He's looking ahead. Minuets at that time were a little bit slower, actually, than what the Beethoven's first movement minuet would be. And there's this whole development, if you are looking at the course of how the third movements grew and evolved over the course of the symphonies between Mozart and Haydn and then Beethoven and then beyond. Beethoven is the time where you started with this idea of the minuet, which is a kind of a lilting piece in three, and then eventually he'll write what he calls scherzos, and they're faster. And they're a little bit more intense. And this is another example of Beethoven in the very first symphony foreshadowing his development of this movement. These are almost scherzos because they're more intense, more serious, and just fast. Mm-hmm. And because they're faster, it can be more challenging to play just to keep everything together.
Right. Let's hear a little bit of this minuet. No fun and games there, in a sense. I mean, in one respect, it seems fun, but yeah, we can really hear how there is an intensity about this, and I'm sure it is actually a really, really difficult piece to play. And we move from that into the finale. How does Beethoven put the final movement together?
He starts with this big chord with everybody playing, and then before he writes the main portion of the music that's pretty fast, he gives us a joke, and this is his teacher Haydn, who is very famous for musical jokes, and so his joke consists of this. He's like, okay, I'm going to play a scale from G all the way to G, but I'm just going to start with three notes. I'll play G, A, B, and we'll pause. We'll say G, A, B, C, and he gives us one note. Scale is going to be eight notes, and so he starts with three, and he's just going to give us three notes, four notes, five notes, six notes, seven notes. There's a fermata on the last of that seventh note, and then finally, whenever he plays all eight notes, we are in the fast portion of the movement.
Let's hear a little bit of the opening to this fourth and final movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 1 in C major. That is fun music, but again, fiendishly difficult to play, I'm sure. As you were saying earlier, you don't want to give too much away in terms of the specifics of what will be happening in the first half of Saturday night's concert. But I'm not sure we've yet given to our listeners enough of a sense of what will happen in terms of this being more than you just standing on the stage and talking. So just explain how this is going to be, not that that wouldn't be interesting, but explain how Saturday night, the first half of the concert, is going to be much more than just an eloquent Dave Anderson lecture about Beethoven.
Well, there'll be three things going on. Of course, I will be on the stage explaining a little bit, kind of the host, the tour guide, if you will. And then the orchestra is going to help me out. They have an excerpt lesson, so we're going to be playing excerpts of some of the work, sections of Beethoven 1, but not just Beethoven 1. We're going to play some other pieces as well, and kind of that help inform what Beethoven is doing. And then we're also going to have projected above some, we're using PowerPoint, you know, some slides, but sometimes there'll be some scores, and sometimes there'll be pictures of things and diagrams of things. And I'm hoping that it'll be really interesting for people to hear. I will, I guess, give one hint, one tease. There is a slide of Michael Jordan that people will see. There's a connection between Michael Jordan and Beethoven, and if the audience wants to find out what that connection is, they will, of course, have to come to the concert. But we're hoping it'll be a fun and informative, and then in the second half of the performance, or in the second half whenever we do the full performance, that people will listen knowing, having this knowledge that is going to make their listen of the piece more meaningful than had they not had that experience.
Right. Talk for a moment about how prepared you are for Saturday night in the sense of, I mean, how scripted is it? And to what extent are you rehearsing, in a sense, the first half of the concert as meticulously as you're rehearsing the second half of the concert, which is, of course, the performance of the symphony intact and without interruption?
Well, Greg, that's a really great question. And we just had a rehearsal last night, and our rehearsals are 2.5 hours. And we spent about 75% of that time on the first half, because it's so complicated. We've never done anything quite like this. And to have, I think there are 83 excerpts for the players, small, very short excerpts. But you do have to rehearse me talking and working seamlessly into, okay, I'm going to say this phrase, and after I say this phrase, I'm going to give the upbeat, and the orchestra has to play these three notes, for example. And then the slide has to change to show this picture whenever I say these words. And so that does need a lot of rehearsing. And then we had a very good rehearsal, productive rehearsal yesterday. And I think I know what I need to change between now and Thursday's rehearsal. And so we'll have a chance to do it again on Thursday to practice. And then it should be all ready to go on Saturday. But I guess to answer your question, we have to, right, at least this week, we have to rehearse the first half even more than the piece, because we've been playing the piece all semester, and so we're pretty comfortable with the actual music of the piece, and now it's just all the other details to explore.
Right. And how much have you thought about, in a sense, at what trajectory to aim your remarks? I'm asking that as someone who's emceed a whole lot of orchestra concerts over the years, and one of the tricks is always to try to figure out, am I speaking to someone who is a complete neophyte who knows nothing about music whatsoever, or am I speaking to somebody who is more of a committed amateur supporter of the symphony who wants to know more, or am I speaking to those people in the audience who really know quite a lot but are hungry for to deepen their expertise? I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can pitch, for instance, the way you introduce a piece of music or the way you talk about it. Have you thought very much about that?
For a year, actually. this is another really great question, and we're going to try to do everybody. We're going to try, because our audience, they are made up of all of those kinds of people that you describe, and so we hope that everything that we talk about can be for everybody. I mean, there will be actual full scores of music that will be projected occasionally, but we'll highlight the different motives. So even if you come to this concert and you don't read music at all, you might actually leave this concert being able to read a little bit of music. You might, in the process, learn, oh, look, I see what he's doing there. I can actually see these notes go by. One thing that we do in most of our concerts is to do a small demonstration to introduce the main work. For example, our last performance, we played a Borodin symphony, and so we played about five or six short excerpts and explained a little bit of those to the audience. And so we do have practice introducing pieces in a small way to the audience, and I think from the comments that we've received, I think it does go over pretty well, because we do a nice job of, you know, it's not like a music history class or music theory class where we expect that this is all music majors that are listening to what we are presenting, but at the same time, you know, people do come with some kind of a knowledge, and so I think we do a nice job of getting that balance, which as you infer can be quite a challenge.
So do you anticipate, assuming this is going to be well received, which I'm pretty certain it probably will be, do you anticipate perhaps doing this again at some point in the future with the Lake Geneva Symphony?
I'll certainly be open to it. We'll sort of see how it goes. I will say it's a lot of work. I'm going to enjoy our next performance this summer when all we do is just play the music and I don't have to create a big presentation on the side. But it has been a very fulfilling work to do to get ready to introduce this piece to the audience. And so I think we probably would do something similar in a future season. Maybe not every season, but maybe, you know, at some point in the future.
Saturday evening's concert, again, is Beethoven 1, Pathway to Genius. The first half of the concert will feature David Anderson of the Lake Geneva Symphony talking about and playing excerpts from the Beethoven First Symphony. And then in the second half of the concert, the First Symphony, about half an hour long, will be played in its entirety. The doors open at 7. The concert begins at 7:30 at Calvary Community Church. That's in Williams Bay. And you can go to their website, lakegenevaorchestra.org, or call 262-359-9072. David Anderson, music director of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. David Anderson, it's been great to talk with you, and very best wishes to you and the Lake Geneva Symphony. I hope all goes well Saturday night, and best wishes with the future as well.
Thank you so much, Greg. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
From the grandeur of Beethoven to the uncommon beauty of the dulcimer, this is Brett Ridgewood, Red Bridgeway, and Phyllis Woods Brown, who are collaborating in this beautiful piece called Gettysburg Rain in the Heart of Shiloh. Brett Ridgeway and Phyllis Woods Brown are coming to Racine this weekend for a workshop with the dulcimer and performing a free concert Saturday at 6 o'clock. And I'm very, very excited to be able to have this opportunity to speak with the two of them via telephone about the dulcimer, the hammer dulcimer and the mountain dulcimer, both of which are going to be featured in this workshop and in this concert. And Brett Ridgeway, I believe you're joining me from someplace in Pennsylvania, I believe, right?
Yes, in western Pennsylvania.
Very good. And Phyllis Woods Brown, you're joining us from someplace else. Where are you located right now?
I'm down south in Tennessee.
Very good. Well, through the wonders of modern technology, I welcome both of you to the morning show. It's great to have you here. I would love to find out from each of you when you first encountered the dulcimer and began playing it yourself. Brett Ridgeway, let's begin with you.
I actually heard it several years ago back in the 80s at a local festival, actually one in Ohio, called Yankee Peddler Festival, and I just fell in love with it. I heard it the first year, and I bought it the second year, and I learned it years and years ago, but never really pursued it until maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Were you already a musician playing other instruments at that point?
No, I played the five-string banjo since I was a teenager, but this is totally different. This is just a different kind of an instrument altogether.
How about you, Phyllis Woods Brown? When did you first encounter the dulcimer and begin playing it?
Well, I absolutely love my story on this, but you don't have time to hear it. But I will condense it down to say that my father built my first mountain dulcimer and my first hammer dulcimer, and my whole family got into the dulcimer world, with quotation marks around that. So I'm very blessed to have a father that got me in like that. I had been a musician prior to that. I have always... Well, I started performing at the age of 14, playing the guitar and singing. And then I kind of got away from it when I had my children. And then Daddy got me back into it when he built my dulcimer. So that's how I got started back.
Wow. Brett Ridgeway, explain how you and Phyllis began collaborating. At what point did you become musical partners? And in a sense, how did you find each other? How did your paths cross?
We actually were both invited to teach at the Ohio Buckeye Festival in Ashley, Ohio, and we didn't know each other before that at all, and we actually became very good friends there, and actually the way we found out about our playing is I actually played Gettysburg Rain by itself on stage, and she had come up to me and asked if she could record it, which I consented, and she contacted me just a bit later and had written the counter melody, Heart of Shiloh, which, in my opinion, made it much more beautiful than what it was by itself. And we just noticed that we had this, and she does have this knack of just doing these counter melodies, and she's done it several times. We just realized that our playing really synced together and we were the same mindset. And one thing I do want to mention is, it threw me when you asked me if I was a musician, and I think it's because I don't read any music at all. And Phyllis does, and that just kind of threw me with that. But that's another part of it.
So in a sense, you don't think of yourself as a musician in the kind of Beethoven sense of the word. You consider yourself, I suppose, a musician of another stripe.
Yes.
Phyllis Woods Brown, I would love to hear just a little bit about the process by which you work in this partnership. You were describing before we went on the air that typically what happens is Brett Ridgeway creates something, and then you are the one who, in a sense, embroiders it or elaborates on it with counter melodies of one kind or another. Just say a word about typically how that happens and the kind of thing that you think about when you put something like that together.
Okay. I love that word, embroidered into that. I'm going to use that. yeah, Brett comes up. A lot of times it's something he has written, and sometimes it's just, you know, a tune that we both know. But if it's a tune we both know, he's really good at doing the intros and the extros and putting songs together, two different songs together or three, and making medleys out of them. And then I have to be actually very careful because we each have personal careers in addition to our joint career. But we're good friends and we bounce these things off of each other all the time. So he'll play something for me that he's written, and I have to kind of wait around and see if he means it for us, because I just get this big smile on my face and I hear something to go behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I can't wait to get a hold of that one. So it comes naturally to me, and I love doing the harmonies. And
that's neat. I want to play for our listeners brief examples of two different kinds of dulcimers, the mountain dulcimer and the hammered dulcimer. And then maybe, Brett, you would explain to us what the difference is. So let's listen here. First of all, this is what's called the mountain dulcimer. Of course, many people know that beautiful American melody, Wayfarin' Stranger. Now, this is the hammered dulcimer. So, Brett Ridgway, explain the difference between the two.
Well, the hammered dulcimer is much, much older. It's actually mentioned in the Bible. So it's not from America. It's actually from the Middle East. But every country has some version of it. It's actually in the zither family in that it's not fretted. It's hit with small hammers. And it's a big trapezoid-shaped instrument. The mountain dulcimer is actually from America. And it's one of two. We have two national instruments, original instruments. The five-string banjo is our national instrument, but the mountain dulcimer is a truly American instrument, probably invented in Virginia. So they're just two totally different. The mountain dulcimer is laid on your lap and either picked or strummed.
Do you typically play them together in the same piece, or do they tend to be played discreetly? That is, this is a hammer dulcimer piece, this is a mountain dulcimer piece. Brett.
Well, Phyllis and I actually meshed the two together. And a lot of people don't. I guess some people do. There's basically two separate worlds, I guess. But at a dulcimer festival, you see both, obviously. But Phyllis and I actually, on a few songs, have put them together. And to me, they're absolutely beautiful. And I did want to mention, too, Phyllis writes her own tunes as well. She has some absolutely gorgeous tunes that she has written. So,
thank you.
Yeah, you do.
And Phyllis, how long have the two of you been musical partners?
Well, we met in 2014, and I think Brett, was it that summer we recorded? It was. 2014, we recorded our first CD together in August, I believe. It was called Together Again for the First Time.
And you've hit the ground running. Fantastic.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we have three CDs now. And much of what we do, we actually do because of the distance. We do over Skype. But, you know, we've actually written a song over Skype before, back and forth.
Wow. That seems especially fun for instruments we think of as so simple and ancient as the dulcimer to be used via Skype. Say a quick word, Brett Ridgway, about the workshop that you're doing in Racine this weekend, this Friday and Saturday. What typically happens at one of these dulcimer workshops?
Well, this workshop, I'm teaching mountain dulcimer. Last year I was there and I taught hammered. This year I'm teaching mountain dulcimer, and Phyllis is teaching hammered. And what we're doing, and this is actually, beginners are welcome to this, and we should have a few extra instruments, but it's a 10-hour workshop, 5 hours the first day, five hours the second day. And one thing we're doing that I'm not sure anybody's done before, you had asked about putting the two instruments together. We're actually going to teach a song. She's going to teach it on hammered. I'm going to teach it on mountain. And then at the end of the workshop, we're bringing the two classes together to perform it together.
Oh, how lovely. That's a great idea. And so, again, to reiterate, even somebody who has never touched a dulcimer before, I mean, complete beginners, would be welcome to be part of this workshop.
Yes.
Very good.
Well, for me, I can't speak for Phyllis.
Phyllis?
Absolutely.
So the welcome mat is open to anyone who is interested, whether or not you've played the dulcimer before or are coming at this as a complete beginner and just want to know more. So again, the workshop is both Friday and Saturday at Holy Communion Lutheran Church, which happens to be my church in Racine. And the phone number there is 632-8802, 632-8802. If you would like more information. And the workshop culminates in a concert, a free concert, Saturday at 6 p.m. Explain what is going to be happening at that concert at 6 o'clock and who's going to be part of it. I'm sorry, Brett.
Well, it's okay, I'll do it. As far as I know, it's just Brett and I, and we're going to be playing some of the pieces off of our CDs and maybe a couple more, and we'll be incorporating clawhammer banjo, mountain dulcimer, and hammer dulcimer. I don't think we're putting any penny whistle in this one, are we, Brett?
I wasn't planning on it, but the banjo will be a part of it.
Very good. Well, it should be an absolutely terrific time, and the public is warmly welcome to, first of all, participate in this workshop if you like, and otherwise to come to this free concert featuring the unique beauty of the hammer dulcimer and mountain dulcimer. The concert is Saturday at 6 p.m. The workshop precedes it Friday and Saturday during the day. And again, you can call 632-8802 for more information. We will go out with a little bit more of this beautiful piece that features the two of you, Gettysburg Rain and the Heart of Shiloh. And Brett Ridgway and Phyllis Woods Brown, I so appreciate the two of you joining me today. I wish you safe travels to Racine for the workshop and for the concert that will be happening in Racine. And very best wishes with all the music making in your respective futures. And thanks again for being part of the morning show.
Thank you.
And it is 8:59 on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Once again, the phone number, if you're interested in that dulcimer workshop happening tomorrow and Saturday, is 632-8802. Tomorrow on the morning show, the interview, which was originally scheduled to air today, with Nan Calvert, and she'll be joined by Allison Thielen from Root Pike Wind, the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, talking about what we can do to make the watershed in our area healthier. We will move to Monday the interview with Dan Hampton, the author of The Flight, Charles Lindbergh's 1927 Transatlantic Crossing, a material